from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. In a speech last month in San Francisco, Governor Jerry Brown passionately defended California's status as a national leader in the battle against climate change.
So we got the scientists, we got the lawyers, and we're ready to fight. We're ready to defend.
Later this morning, Governor Brown is expected to defend his track record on issues like the environment and lay out his vision for the future of California in his annual State of the State address. Coming up on Forum, we'll preview the speech, and we want to hear from you. What do you think Governor Brown's top priorities ought to be for 2017? It's coming up next after this news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Governor Brown delivers his State of the State address later this morning, and KQED will bring you that speech live at 10 a.m. The address takes on added significance this year, coming 4 days after the inauguration of President Trump, whose policies on issues like climate change run contrary to those espoused by leaders in Sacramento. On Inauguration Day, a group of Democrats in the State Assembly released what they called an open letter to Californians, including a video vowing to defend California principles on schools and immigration.
While our goals differ from the incoming administration, we will waste no time lamenting because we will stay focused on our work for California.
So how far will Governor Brown go to defend progressive California values in a state where, according to a new Reuters poll, an opinion poll, one of three residents want to withdraw from the union? We're going to preview the governor's State of the State address in this opening hour with Katie Orr, KQED Sacramento politics and government reporter, and we'll also talk with some other California stakeholders. But joining us first is Bay Area Republican lawmaker Kathleen Baker. Excuse me, she's assembly member for the 16th district, which includes Walnut Creek, Danville, and Pleasanton. And it's Kathryn Baker. I'm sorry, Kathryn Baker. Good to have you with us. Welcome.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm okay, and thank you for joining us. I know you're on your way to Sacramento to hear the governor's speech. I'm just curious to know perhaps what your anticipation is, what your hopes and anxieties are. You're the only Republican lawmaker, after all, in the Bay Area.
Well, I do have hopes for what we hear this morning. And first, I hope to have a realistic assessment from him on what are the challenges facing California, so realism. And I hope that he will have a focus on those challenges right now facing Californians, and a de-emphasis on other distractions that may be out there. You know, I just dropped off my kids at school and saw them walking to class, teachers walking to class, parents doing the same. And we have a lot of challenges in education for our kids, K through 12, and higher education opportunity for them. And I really want to hear from him today, a realistic appreciation for what they are and a focus on it. And transportation, dropped off the kids, got right onto the roads. I saw a BART platform jammed with people trying to crowd onto a train, and 680 and 580 in gridlock. And I really hope to hear from the governor a realistic appreciation for that challenge and the effect it's having on the Bay Area and constituents in my district and all across California, and a focus on those issues. That's going to be key for me.
You want to hear specifically on transportation and education.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask a broader question, though, because there's a good deal of concern about the vulnerability of California now at the federal level and what it means for state priorities, especially with health care. And there's also concern about immigration. Clearly, Governor Brown has been very much in favor of attacking, going after and doing something about climate change, and also he's been very strong in his support of immigrant rights. But this is counter pretty much to what we're hearing from the Trump administration. How do you feel that's going to all balance out?
Well, look, I, since November, there's pretty much been a singular focus, if not an obsession, from my colleagues in the majority, both the governor and the leadership in the majority, on how they can start drawing battle lines with the federal administration. I understand that. I understand how we did in California, and there are going to be areas where we are going to very strongly diverge from where this administration may go. But what I've seen in those 2 months of this obsession has been a lack of focus on the issues that actually matter right now, that we should be working on right now. There's been talk about it, but it seems very scattered, and most of the attention is towards Washington. We have work to do in California. And I think that's where we need to turn. I hope there will not be a continued distraction with what may or may not happen at the federal level. Many things are still speculative when we have real and present policies and proposals that are show how they're going to affect California. I hope we will come together in addressing those and fighting for California. But right now, today, there are things we know we need to be working on, and we need to hear more focus on that.
Well, I've heard your priorities are education, transportation. What would you like specifically to hear from the governor on those two?
Well, I'd like to hear, first of all, that he shares those as true priorities. We can spend a good part of this morning hearing from him on what's happening at the federal level, but I'd really like to hear from him on those issues. And in particular, how we need to work together to make sure that there is sufficient support for our students in schools, not just the dollars, but access in higher education and an ability to help students finish college or university in 4 years, which is a real challenge for our California students, getting into our California system and also being able to complete in a reasonable amount of time. We need to work together on that. And transportation. Look, we need to work together in a bipartisan way on investments in our infrastructure. And it's not, let's just find ways to get new taxes on our constituents. There's more reforms we can do to get better spending. And this is a governor with whom I share some fiscal prudence and fiscal restraint. I'd like to see some addressing of how we can spend our dollars better now that we have these challenges. And there's opportunities there, and very specific ones. I'd like to hear from him on it.
Well, do you think or anticipate that perhaps he will at least talk about how to backfill with respect to federal issues like federal health care? I mean, you got a third of Californians getting government subsidized health care. And I realize that this is not necessarily what you've outlined as what you want to hear from the governor. But we're going to have to probably anticipate some serious cutbacks, aren't we?
Well, I think we need to anticipate not only what may or may not happen at the federal level with the Affordable Care Act, but we've already, this administration, particularly the last 2 years, has greatly expanded Medicaid even beyond what the Affordable Care Act called for, and has asked for quite a bit of new funding for these programs. And we need to take a pause and assessment of where we're at, expanding new spending and new programs in our healthcare area. We really need to find out, first, how can we shore up what we have? California's worked very hard on implementing the Affordable Care Act. And I think before we start expanding that program any further, I hope to hear from him how he's going to try to solidify what we have instead of keep expanding. I mean, to the tune of tens of millions of dollars just in minor programs here and there keep adding up. That's what we've seen from the governor so far. And I certainly do want to hear what he has to say on health care. That's a major topic of debate. Housing is an additional one. You know, as I drove through the Central Valley this morning and saw all the people who are living in the Central Valley commuting to the Bay Area because they can't afford to live in the Bay Area. Need to hear from him on that.
Anything else that you want to add before we go to our own reporter in Sacramento in terms of what you would like to hear from Governor Brown today?
Well, one final point is I hope he will reach across the aisle. I realize we are in a two-thirds supermajority world now, but there are ideas that our Republican caucus has for how we can work together on all the challenges I've identified. And wouldn't it be great if we really put our focus on a large bipartisan deal in this first quarter this spring to show that we can do it? And I think that would be showing what the federal government should be doing. We can set that real example in California. So I hope to hear that from him as well.
I thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your
being
with us.
Thank you, Michael.
That's Catherine Baker, Assembly Member, 16th District, California State Assembly District, which includes Walnut Creek, Danville, and Pleasanton. And we're going to go right to Sacramento and welcome Katie Orr, Sacramento politics and government reporter, who is right on this story. And she, of course, is with KQED News. And Katie, good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
What are you expecting a governor to say in the state of the state today? I mean, what is he expected to prioritize?
Well, I think we will certainly hear a lot about climate change. Certainly that's one of Governor Jerry Brown's key issues. And it's really one that we've heard him get the most fired up about when talking about the Trump administration and possible implications for that. Legislative Democrats here, as you mentioned earlier, wasted no time in coming out swinging against President Trump. Jerry Brown was a little bit more tempered in his remarks, except when it came to climate change. He made a speech in San Francisco a few weeks ago.
That was a speech to the geophysicists you're talking about?
Exactly, yes, yes, saying really that California is a leader and that we're going to continue to lead and fight against this any policies that might you know, roll back California's climate change policies. So I think we'll hear a lot about that. I think we will hear something about transportation. And I am interested to see if he addresses the Trump administration directly. As I said, he hasn't really been as outspoken as legislative Democrats. So it'll be interesting to hear if he steps that up at all.
Well, in fact, you meant that talk that he gave to the geophysicist, he was pretty defiant. He said, if Trump shuts down satellites getting climate change data, we'll launch our own. And is there expectation that he's going to say some other things vis-a-vis the environment? I mean, particularly about cap and trade.
Well, he would likely touch on that. Cap and trade is up in the air right now. There's a court hearing, I believe, in Sacramento today about the future of the program. And, of course, right now it's slated to expire in 2020. He wants to extend that for, you know, the foreseeable future. Didn't get a lot of traction on that last year. And so now, perhaps with the supermajority, he's hoping that they can have a little more traction on that legislatively. But it's enough to say that there isn't, just because there is a supermajority doesn't mean that things are a done deal, because, of course, you have different branches of the Democratic Party that you have to appeal to.
I should mention that lawsuit that you alluded to on cap and trade, it was against cap and trade being an unconstitutional tax and put forward by the Chamber of Commerce and a bunch of businesses. Los Angeles Times, in fact, called it a ticking time bomb. Could you say something? Actually, I'd like you to say something about the governor swearing in California's new attorney general, Javier Becerra. He's a longtime L.A. lawmaker, of course, and the first Latino attorney general in the state. And let's hear, actually, Becerra talking with KQED's Marisa Lagos back in December about his goals.
We're going to want to make sure that clean energy remains something that California leads in, that our common sense treatment of immigrants is something that becomes a model for the rest of the nation, that we continue to protect our health security law, and that we make sure that on criminal justice, we're the state that continues to do the reforms. And, of course, I'm, as the state's chief law enforcement officer, it's my responsibility to help make sure that within the state of California, families are safe.
What are you thinking, Katie, along the lines of a number of lawmakers, including, of course, Republican State Senator John Morlach, concerned that there's a hostile tone being set by Becerra as the choice, and it could put risk to the federal government's $86 billion that they give to the state annually?
Sure. I think, you know, Becerra was chosen in part because of his experience in Washington, knowing how to interact with the federal government. Republicans had said in the confirmation process that they thought he was a good man, certainly stand-up guy. They had some concerns about his approaches to different areas regarding crime. But I know that Democrats really see him as someone who is going to be a bulldog for the state and stand up against the Trump administration and try and protect California's policies. That being said, though, it is interesting that legislative Democrats have gone ahead and hired a former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder to provide the legislature with advice and also to act as a litigator if necessary, which has some people, you know, speculating why. If we have the Attorney General, why do we need Eric Holder as well? He's not free. They paid, I believe it's a $25,000 a month retainer for him. So there is certainly some politics here at play. During the confirmation process, Senate Leader Kevin De Leon really tried to pin Becerra down on whether or not he plans to run again for Attorney General in 2018. Certainly he's being appointed now, right? So he didn't have to run for office. But Kamala Harris's term, who he is taking over for, of course, because she was elected to the U.S. Senate, is up in 2018. And so will he run again for AG, or will he possibly run for governor? This certainly puts him in a good political position to take on other posts if he wants to. He would not commit to running. He said he's very excited for the AG job, but that he wouldn't definitively rule out any future possible offices.
We're talking to our own Katie Oro, who's with us from Sacramento, KQED News, Sacramento politics and government reporter. Earlier, I don't know if you heard, Katie, we had Assemblymember Catherine Baker on, and she was talking about housing as a priority. There was nothing on housing in the last State of the State. Can we expect something this time around?
you know, once again, affordable housing advocates were likely disappointed with the budget. Last year, Governor Jerry Brown had said he would give $400 million to affordable housing if he and the legislature could work out an agreement on something called the Buy Right proposal, basically streamlining the process of developing affordable housing. That deal went nowhere. This year, he eliminated that $400 million from the budget to help make up for what he sees a projected $2 billion budget deficit. His solution is saying we have to find some way to bring down the market, the unit price for affordable housing, because especially depending on where you live, like a place in San Francisco, it can be incredibly expensive to build one unit of affordable housing. But, you know, that's not any extra money, and affordable housing advocates are likely pretty disappointed. I don't know if he'll spend much time in his state of the state on housing simply because of that. There's not a lot of resources allocated to it in his budget proposal.
Well, gratefully, we've also had a lot of water recently, and I'm wondering if the governor is going to address, or if you have any sense that he's going to talk about storing water with all these rains we've had. Donald Trump said there was not a drought in California. Well, now he's right. There is no longer a drought, but we have to plan for the future. And presumably, maybe we can expect Jerry Brown to be talking about his Delta Tunnel plans. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, that isn't something that we have heard a ton about lately. And that might just be because the price tag, I think it's around $50 billion or so, and someone might be able to correct me. But it's an expensive project. It's one that faces a lot of opposition, and there are federal hurdles it has to clear as well. And it will be interesting to see, given his relatively short time left here in office, if we get that through. And certainly now that it's been raining, of course, it's one of those things when it rains, people kind of forget, right? Like, you have water, there's water everywhere. These projects tend to take a back seat in people's minds. And that's certainly not the way that Governor Brown wants us to think of it. He has said a lot that we're in this period of climate change where we have droughts like the ones we've been going through, and then we have incredible rains and then incredible fires. You know, the droughts get longer, but the storms get more fierce. And this certainly, this cycle anyway, seems to be bearing him out. But I don't feel like there is a lot of political momentum behind the tunnels right now. Lawmakers are focused on other projects.
And high-speed rail?
High-speed rail is another interesting one because that depends a lot on federal money. I had spoken to Congressman Mark Desaunier earlier and said he's trying to work something out with some of the Republicans from the Central Valley, but it's very vague right now. And of course, the big X factor is Donald Trump. We don't know what he's going to propose in the federal budget. We don't know how California's budget is going to be affected by that. And so high-speed rail is going forward. I mean, they're building it. Its construction has started on the first leg of the project. But to get it to the finish line, I think, I don't know. There's a long way to go.
I'm also wondering, and we're going to bring Chris Haney into this discussion, who's executive director of the California Budget and Policy Center, but if you have any bead, Katie, on whether or not the governor is going to once again talk about the need for caution in spending and reinvestment. I mean, he's talking a lot about rainy days. The rainy days are here, but the relevance to the budget, particularly sort of trying to fortify against what might be cutbacks on the Fed's part, needs to be taken into account, presumably, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I think certainly we'll hear something about fiscal caution. That's sort of been his hallmark for these past few years. And again, we're seeing him cut back on spending. He is not proposing any cuts to programs now, but what he's doing is cutting back planned spending that like hadn't gone into effect yet, and you know, trying to beef up the rainy day fund. I think we're definitely going to hear him talk about that. He talks a lot about the cycle of economic booms and recessions, and how we're overdue for a recession by several years now, and it's coming, and California needs to be ready for that. That's a very common message from him, and I certainly expect it would be one we'd hear him talk about today.
That's Katie Orr, Sacramento politics and government reporter for KQED News. And Katie, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And we're going to be joined shortly, actually, by Chris Haney, as I said earlier. But we want to hear from you. What do you want to hear from our governor? And what should be at the top of his agenda for the year ahead? Let us know what your thoughts are. You can call us now at our toll-free number and add your voice. The number is 866 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or, of course, go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Chris Haney, let me bring you into this. I mean, there's certainly a great deal of uncertainty at the federal level and what it means for state priorities. I mean, especially health care, as I've tried to outline and certainly try to emphasize here. What are you anticipating from the governor in terms of his budget?
Yeah, we're anticipating that he will talk a lot about that uncertainty. As Katie was just saying, he will probably strike a tone around the state's budget that is about fiscal responsibility, preparing for economic unknowns. And the new wrinkle there, of course, is the large level of uncertainty about what's coming from the federal government. I don't expect that he'll go into much detail in that regard, because so much is not known about the details of, for instance, repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. But the higher level of uncertainty than in prior state of state addresses makes me think he will talk a lot about the state being very careful to prepare for whatever is happening next.
What do you think about the argument that's coming mainly from the left that he's not been enough help in terms of his opposition to Trump, even though he spoke, as we said earlier, defiantly about the satellites and taking them down and climate change? In other words, the argument would say he's really no friend of the working class or the poor or people of color. He's too establishment, so the argument goes.
Well, I think, you know, you have to look at the tone the governor tends to strike across lots of different challenges the state has faced, not just what's happening next at the federal level. And he's always tried to be more of a sort of voice of reason and been less likely to respond in a heated fashion and more likely to talk about preparing, being ready, taking responsible action. So I think there's probably more defiance and more preparation happening in the administration of Governor Brown than we're hearing about. He talked in his budget release earlier this month about the scenario planning that they're doing. So I think they're readying themselves. He may signal some of that in terms of the swearing in of Xavier Becerra today, but I don't expect that he'll strike a defiant tone necessarily.
I guess what I'm getting at here is the argument that maybe socially he's a Democrat, but economically he's a kind of liberal Republican. And this comes out of the idea that there's a lot of budget cutting, and also no oil tax, which certainly the left would like to see, or tax on Uber or tax on Airbnb, that sort of thing. We are coming up on a break, however, and I again want to invite our listeners to join in. Talking to Chris Haney now, who's Executive Director of the California Budget and Policy Center. And again, we'd like to hear from you. If you want to let us know what you want to hear from the governor, give us a call. What should be the top of his agenda for the year ahead? You can call us now at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org or post any questions or comments you might have right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, as you heard, we are going to be going to Governor Brown's speech in the next hour. Forum will be preempted. But we are going to continue with you and want to hear from you about what you expect or hope will come out of that speech. And indeed, what do you want to hear from the governor? What should be at the top of his agenda for the year ahead? We're getting some responses here. Let me just read a couple of them. Tony writes, 1, fix the housing crisis. 2, keep California connected with the global economy. And 3, expand regional alliances with neighboring states, including in-state tuition and health care coverage. And as I said, you can add your voice here by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Ernst says, I'd like to see California use its cloud as a major shipping hub to help reduce the use of high-polluting bunker fuel in cargo ships. That's pretty specific. And Chris Haney's with us, Executive Director of the California Budget and Policy Center. And before we went to the break, we were just talking about criticism from the left. So, Chris, let me read you some of that that's coming in here. I'll call it pushback, at least on Governor Brown, and get your response. One listener writes, whatever happened to the Jerry Brown known as the people's governor of the 1970s? His current administration is acting more and more like a clone of Ronald Reagan and his neoliberal policies that favor the super rich elites and Wall Street while totally ignoring the need of the people of California regarding education, health care, and all other services that cater to the state's middle class and the poor. And Paul writes, Jerry feigns concern for the people while representing the interests of property owners and the wealthy. He'll surely pretend that foreign housing speculators from China, et cetera, should be ignored or worse, welcome. A comment from you, Chris?
Well, I think, one comment about the governor's record, it would be while their comment noted, his record in the 1970s, he was also largely viewed as being an unsuccessful governor in terms of being able to advance priorities. I think over these his most recent two terms, he's struck a stance of trying to advance a couple of priorities each year in a responsible fashion amid what was at first a state budget crisis and now a sort of sustained period of growth, and he's been largely successful in that regard. So I would say he's been much more of a tactician and a pragmatic leader this time around. That's mean he also hasn't taken on some of the state's larger issues, like, as one of the commenters noted, the state's housing crisis. He's made some efforts. Those haven't necessarily been successful. So, like any track record of any governor, there have been some successes, and then there have been some issues that haven't been prioritized.
Well, let me ask you about what some feel ought to be another priority, and that is revenue. Do you think or expect that he's going to say anything to kind of jimmy up small business? Mostly capital in the state comes in from Silicon Valley and Hollywood, and there are some who say there have to be better sources of capital, and that means helping and supporting small business more.
So I would not expect him to talk specifically about revenue issues, in part because some of what he would be able to say there is going to be shaped by federal tax policy proposals that are likely going to be coming out sometime this year. What I would expect is for him to express some concern about federal actions that could harm the California economy. So, for instance, undoing the trade agreement that had just been reached and the potential for harm to California's economy actually then harming the California state budget and what it can actually do in terms of the funds it has available. So he may come at the revenue issue that way, but I don't think he's at a period in time where he can say much on the specifics of revenue proposals.
I want to go to our callers, but first, let me get you on the record about something else, Chris. There were some accounting mistakes last fall, and there was, as a result, a shortfall. John Moorlach, whom we mentioned earlier, the Republican senator from Casa Mesa, made quite a bit out of this. Does this come into the picture now, or should it come into the picture?
Well, it's one part of the governor's proposed budget this year, which is predicting a small shortfall and therefore having to take some policy responses to close a $1.6 billion gap. Part of that shortfall and what's going into it is an accounting error that was made in last year's budget regarding cost to the state's Medi-Cal program, health insurance for low-income households. And so they're having to make a change to this year's budget to account for that. In the sort of sense of accounting errors, it was a larger one than we would typically have seen. On the other hand, as a sort of share of the overall budget, it's not a particularly large number. And it just plays into the sort of, final details that go into how the state balances the budget in the months to come.
Well, I want to balance some calls in here, and I ought to mention that there's been a lot of concern, of course, about more revenue going into infrastructure. I think our first caller, let me go to Norman first, who's talking about concern over Southern California and the water. Go ahead, Norman. You're on the air. I'm sorry. I was right initially. Bob is our first caller. But you do want to talk about repairing infrastructure, Bob. I'm sorry. Got my signals crossed there. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. We hear about wanting to spend money on transportation infrastructure, but I'm afraid that the money is going to end up going towards new transportation things rather than fixing the roads. I heard that the governor wants to raise the gas tax by a certain amount, but the money's not going to go to fix the roads. Why are they not repairing our falling down freeways and bridges? That needs to be fixed. Highway 1 going through San Francisco is full of potholes, and they don't seem to ever want to do anything about it. When are they going to actually reinvest money in the roads and bridges themselves instead of adding new things like the bullet train to the budget?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Bob. And Chris Haney, let me go to you on that. What do we expect to see here in terms of infrastructure spending?
Right. So the governor has a proposal in his proposed budget for 2017 and 18 that would actually impose an increase in the gas tax and some other fee increases. And those dollars would actually go to fixing roads and other infrastructure, renovation, repair, maintenance. There would probably be some new construction, depending on the needs and demands of certain regions. A fair bit of the revenue would go to local governments to support their efforts. That proposal, it should be said, is separate from the high-speed rail proposal, which has its own separate funding mechanisms, interaction with the federal government. And so the two things, while they're both related to transportation infrastructure, are two very separate proposals.
And let me thank Bob for his call, and we'll go to more of your calls in just a moment. First, I want to go to Paul Wenger, though, who is joining us. He's president of the California Farm Bureau. He's an almond farmer. And Paul Wenger, good to have you back on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you for having me again, Michael.
I guess the real question to you I want to start out with, since it was mentioned before, is the TPP and what it means for California farmers. That is, Trump actually moving against it, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement.
Well, we've all worked very hard on TPP, first for the Trade Promotion Authority to give the president, President Obama at the time, to be able to negotiate. And now it comes back for an up and down vote. Ironically, both the right and the left of Congress were not very favorable of it. The Clinton campaign also said they were against it. And now President Trump has acted to pull out of TPP. I think it just sends a terrible message to trading partners that we negotiate something, we have this transfer of administration, this transfer of power, and we don't continue, is our word our bond. So the proof in the pudding will be whether they negotiate, some bilateral agreements with some of these countries. But California, we bring a lot into this state, and we export a lot. So it's going to be huge for California. 53% of the exports of the Port of Oakland are agricultural exports.
And what would you like the governor to do in terms of stepping up for your concerns?
Well, just don't do what they did to us last year. As we see the minimum wage increase, and even though most farmers pay way above minimum wage, it does set a level. And a study that was done by Phil Martin, University of California, Davis, that in 2022, when the minimum wage goes up and adjusted for the local economy, a $15 an hour minimum wage in San Francisco will equate to $6.71 in my hometown of Modesto. That said, the minimum wage at $15 in my hometown of Modesto, an equally viable minimum wage in San Francisco, should be $33.50 an hour. That's why we continue to see people driving over the Altamont Pass every day, working in the Bay Area, living in the Valley. We talk about climate change. There's nothing worse than having all those cars on there. So we also saw an overtime. We were the most progressive state in paying workers overtime after 10 hours, the only state in the entire country that did that. We passed the 1066, the overtime to go to a 40-hour work week, 8-hour work day. And we're already seeing businesses starting operations in Mexico. In fact, a lot of big chain stores are looking to make agreements with sourcing their product out of Mexico because they know they can get it cheaper out of there. So it really is a sad state of affairs when we're chasing good jobs out of California and moving it to other countries.
Well, since you're talking about Mexico, I have to also ask you, San Joaquin Valley had a good deal of support for President Trump, but they're fearful that he's going to come down hard and aggressive deportations. You got about 85% of farm workers who are here undocumented. What do you want to hear from the governor on that score?
Yeah, I'm not sure this is something the governor can really help with, and it really will come down to the administration. And so hopefully we can get something done. We have asked and worked very hard with Senator Feinstein and her proposal a number of years ago for comprehensive immigration reform. We didn't get it, but hopefully we can help bring people out of the shadows, get them good documentation. A lot of this talk has been rhetoric. We know that they're not going to deport folks. The irony is that even during the Obama administration, again, we had to rely on Senator Feinstein to weigh in for us. There was a lot of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, surprise audits, I-9 audits on fields just at harvest time. And so workers would, because they knew they didn't have documentation that would stand the scrutiny of Immigration Customs Enforcement, they left the fields, and we had a lot of product that spoiled in the fields. And Senator Feinstein, did come to our assistance on that with the Obama administration, said, could you maybe notify people beforehand, because these are people's livelihoods that you're putting at risk.
Paul, I appreciate so much you being with us. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks.
That's Paul Wenger, joining from Sacramento, president of the California Farm Bureau. He is an almond farmer. I'm going to go to more of your calls, but first let me go back to you, Chris Haney. Talking about figures with undocumented immigrants, about a tenth of, that's the estimate at least, of workers have come here illegally. What do you expect or what do you want along these lines from Jerry Brown? I mean, at least he probably rhetorically is going to say he's going to stand by for immigrant rights and protection of undocumented, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he will say something along those lines, whether it's in this State of the State address or in addresses he might give along the way. And I think the appointment of Xavier Becerra as Attorney General definitely signals the state's intention to be a place that is welcoming to people from other countries, and that tries to ensure that, as Paul was just saying, that they're not in the shadows, that they are a part of local economies, that they're taken care of and protected in terms of health care and other sorts of systems. So, much along the lines of how California's operated in recent years, I think the state and the governor will approach this in terms of what's good for the economy, whether that's farm workers or workers in other sectors, what's good for those individuals and communities, and try to combat whatever happens next in terms of federal actions.
And let me bring another caller on, and this is indeed Norman. Norman, you're on the air. Welcome.
Okay, thank you. My two comments are really about the shipping of the water to Southern California. I understand that the governor is governor of the whole state, but the situation is this. If you send water down into the desert, more people are going to move into the desert. I mean, that's just numbers. And then I think the bullet train is to allow Southern politicians to be able to commute to Sacramento. And I think that whole scenario, the reason Governor Brown is in favor of both of those, is because he's paying back Hollywood for support for his governor's race. I think it's political.
Norman, let's hear from Chris Haney on this. Chris, you want to comment on Norman's comment?
I think, for now, I take the governor at his word that the infrastructure proposals that he's made as signature parts of his legacy are about improving the state's infrastructure systems. If you look at his tunnels proposal, it goes back to water proposals that he was a part of back in the 1970s. The lack of progress in terms of upgrading the state's water infrastructure since then. The high-speed rail project is very much something he seems to focus on in terms of what will the California economy look like 30, 40 years from now and what kinds of investments can be made. And when you look at very viable regional economies around the country, I mean around the world and other countries, you see high-speed rail as part of the transportation infrastructure. So I think this is a part of what he sees as a 20, 30, 40-year infrastructure need for the state, not so much about the sort of short-term political side of it.
Chris Haney, again, is Executive Director of California Budget and Policy Center. And again, we do invite you to weigh in on this. Want to hear from you and want to hear your priorities and what you feel ought to be something that the governor ought to be talking about in his State of the State, or what's at the top of the agenda for you for the year ahead. Again, you can join us now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, and we welcome your calls. There's a listener who writes about pension costs, Chris, and this certainly did come up in the last State of the State speech. This listener writes, California's unfunded pension liabilities, the gap between what the funds expect to have and what retirees will be owed, are roughly $450 billion. I think that figure is correct. It's a big number, listener writes, and investment earnings have stumbled in the last couple of years, so you expect to hear anything from the governor about pension liabilities?
I don't know whether that will rise to the level of his mentioning it in this State of State address. He may briefly mention progress on various fronts around the state budget, including on trying to rein in state obligations around pension and health care costs. But in terms of his budgets in prior years and his proposed budget for 2017-18, he is continuing to build in proposals that increase the state's commitments to bringing down those unfunded obligations, to striking collective bargaining agreements with public sector employees that make those pension costs and related health care costs more sustainable over the 30 and 40-year timelines that the state's looking at. So there is progress being made there. It's important to remember that the big numbers that you hear when it comes to pension costs are paid out over long periods of time. The other thing I would say just quickly there is that the state's retirement systems are actually making changes to adjust for the investment returns that they're receiving, and the state budget proposal for next year does include some increased spending from the state in order to account for those lower levels of return.
I've got a tweet here, by the way, from Nubu. Says, I want to hear Governor Brown stress the need for a united front by all of our state and local officials to resist the feds, protect California. I don't know that he's going to talk about secession, Chris, but, you know, there's a new Reuters poll that shows that one out of three Californians feel that secession would be okay or seem to approve.
Right. I wouldn't expect the governor to even mention secession. And I don't know whether he will use the state of the address to strike a tone of the state in a unified fashion, resisting whatever comes from the federal government. I suspect he will continue to take a more reasoned tone around sort of preparing for what might be coming, doing so in some sort of comprehensive fashion. If he strikes a more defiant tone, I expect it will be in the arenas where he's been more likely to do that in recent weeks and months. So, for instance, in the arena of climate change, where he has staked a lot of his reputation and legacy going forward, perhaps in the immigration arena, particularly with the swearing in of Xavier Becerra. So, and then perhaps something around the economy, where I think he will have very heightened concerns about federal actions and their impacts on the state's economy.
And we'll bring another caller into the discussion. John, thank you for waiting. You're on Forum.
Thank you. You know, there's a lot of fake news rolling around the media and the internet these days. I just wanted to make sure that I was not hearing fake news when I heard your politicians quoted as saying they were going to defend California values when it comes to education and immigration. Given that our K-12 schools, public schools, are among the worst in the nation, and that a large reason for that underperformance is our broken Mexican immigration policy, were they being ironic, or are they serious when they talk about California values with regard to educational performance? Thanks.
Okay, thank you. We'll let that stand as a rhetorical question. He's alluding to our earlier discussion with Assemblymember Catherine Baker, who I believe made that statement. And let me bring another caller on here and find out, Carol, what your thoughts are. Go ahead.
Hi. I would like to see the funding restored to the courts, and restored plus and plus. During the last 10 years, we've seen the courts really funding cut back in terms of hours, in terms of court reporters being laid off, in terms of translators, interpreters not being available. And the result is that the due process for lower-income and middle-income people has really, really been cut back. And he has cut hours and cut funding, but he's never, now that funds are available to the state, he's never brought any back, and I really think we need to see that.
Well, I thank you for that. Certainly, former Supreme Court Chief Justice Ron George made all kinds of efforts on that score, and I think accomplished a good deal. Teaching artists, Katie writes, I'm a teaching artist here in the Bay Area, and I'm interested in how the governor plans to address potential defunding of the National Endowment of the Arts and how that's going to impact arts education here in California. Expect to hear anything from him on that, Chris Haney?
You know, I wouldn't. While the state does spend on the arts, I think whether it's the courts or the arts or a variety of other state programs, with the uncertainty at the federal level and the likely major impacts to the state's budget in terms of the potential repeal of the Affordable Care Act and some other cuts, I don't think the governor is going to be talking a lot about new spending or increasing spending in some of these program areas. So as unfortunate as the elimination of the National Endowment for the Arts might be, I suspect the governor would say, if asked, that it's beyond the state's capacity to backfill whatever that loss might be. There might be some effort over time to increase the state's commitments if the economy were to continue to grow, but I'm not expecting the governor to commit to new spending in the near term.
And that would presumably include new spending for the poor and the unsheltered, Robert wants to know?
Yes, absolutely. As Katie Orr was mentioning earlier, the only changes on the spending front the governor is proposing in the budget so far are to actually scale back one-time commitments that were there. There aren't any further ongoing.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, in fact. Yeah. You're listening to Forum, by the way. We're talking to Chris Haney, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, simply go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we're going to go to more of your calls. Let me bring in Chan from San Rafael. You're on.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I think the most important thing when we come down to it is early childhood education. Everything starts there. You start with a solid preschool, and you build on that. You solve so many of the state's problems. You deal with language. You deal with acculturation. You deal with psychological problems. You deal with all of the things when they can be dealt with at a reasonable cost instead of having everything fall apart as people get older and can't cope. And I think it's so important that that is worth more than anything the state can spend any money on. And just to segue a little off that to the pension thing, the main problem with the pension thing happened when the pension companies sold the idea that they can deliver 8% and 7% return on their investment, and the state bought that. And they can't deliver more than 4%. And that's why we have a real shortfall.
All right, Chan, I thank you for those comments. Do you think, Chris Haney, we're going to hear anything on early education from the governor?
You know, I don't, here again, I don't think so. I think there is a consensus in the state legislature with what the caller said, which is that if the state can make an investment that has the most return on it for Californians over time, it would be in the early childhood education arena. But the state in recent years hasn't been able even to fund the return of the number of slots in the current system that are available compared to where it was prior to the Great Recession. So we have a lot of building back to do in that arena, and certainly even more expansion that could happen, but the state fiscally just hasn't been in a position to do that, and with uncertainty at the federal level, it seems unlikely, pending some other large proposal, that would be a possibility.
And I want to read some, suggestions from listeners. Maureen says, consider workarounds to Costa-Hawkins, or at least consider talking about rent stabilization. Costa-Hawkins is a state law that limits what cities can pass with respect to rent control laws. And there's a comment from Brad. There's no question that California is by far the biggest counterpoint to the Trump agenda. I want to see the governor set the tone for this new political era. And here from the other side of the political continuum is Louise, who says there's so much time and money wasted in government. Brown should bring in Trumparian type consultants who can coach on ahead of schedule, under budget. Chris Haney?
I think the governor's record on balancing the state budget and fiscal responsibility stands as pretty strong. As many of the callers have suggested here, the critique has been more that he hasn't spent enough on programs for people who are poor or in low-income conditions, and on other areas like early childhood education, where we know the investments could really, pay off in the longer term. So, I would argue he on the issue of bringing budgets in on time and under budget, he's hit the mark.
Let's hit the mark with another caller, and that's Hiwi. Good morning. Or just plain we, I'm sorry, from San Jose. Hiwi.
I'm sorry, thank you. Hi, I'm actually calling because I think this is the time to be bold. California has shown that we're willing to stand up to this the really conservative tide that's flowing across the country. And in terms of health care, we know we're going to lose the Affordable Care Act. So I think it's time for California to be bold and step up and actually try and implement a single-payer system to create a model for that the rest of the country can follow, hopefully, in the near future. And I'll take my comments offline. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And Chris Haney, I mean, we come back to health care because about $100 billion annually, one-sixth from the state general fund, but $100 billion comes from the Fed.
Right. And I think you will see state leaders move to be bold in terms of their response. Being bold in this case might actually mean taking the time to figure out what a comprehensive response in California would look like. Who can the state afford to cover? How does it pay for it? I think there will be short-term responses to whatever federal actions come down at California in the weeks and months to come. But bold in this case might actually require some time to figure out what a California healthcare system looks like if the federal government's vacating that space.
All right, and a couple more listener comments about what they hope from Governor Brown. Trish says, I hope Governor Brown takes a stand on police brutality and increases oversight of police forces. And a comment from Dave, who says, the success of some of the tech companies in Silicon Valley is making the Bay Area quality of life terrible with traffic, housing, prices, and more. A lot of these issues need to be addressed regionally. The 50 little towns between San Francisco and San Jose are helpless. We don't want to lose Facebook, Google, et cetera, but they need to expand elsewhere in California, not in the Bay Area. We're full. Let me thank Chris Haney. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Chris Haney is Executive Director of the California Budget and Policy Center. We also heard from Paul Wenger, President of the California Farm Bureau, and our own Katie Orr, Sacramento Politics and Government reporter, and also in the initial part of the hour with Assemblymember Catherine Baker from the 16th District. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Katie McMurrin. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Fott and Jeremy Siegel. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Executive producer, Holly Kernan. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.